Welcome to the jungle. I am Jim Rome. I've got an enormous program today. Really, really good show. Can't wait to get to it, so let's not waste any time. Program brought to you, of course, by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Busy, busy first hour. I'm going to get into the Astros finally getting around and meeting with the media to talk about their cheating scandal, stealing scandal. That's coming up momentarily. But first, let me say, next segment, a conversation with Tampa Bay Lightning head coach John Cooper. Also in hour number one, Mike Krzyzewski. So we'll go back to back. Tampa Bay Lightning coach John Cooper, Coach K, second hour is wide open. And in hour number three, Bob Myers makes a triumphant return to the jungle. Golden State Warriors president of basketball operations. In the meantime, if you know what you want to talk about, hit me up right now, 1-800-636-8686. You can follow me on Twitter, please, at Jim Rome. And you know you can email me as well, Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. Busy first hour, let's get right at it. The Astros, as I mentioned, finally did get around to meeting with the media to discuss the sign-stealing scandal. Did not go especially well. It did not go especially well, especially for the owner. Let's start with the players. Alex Bregman and Jose Altuve spoke briefly. Let me start with Bregman.
I have some brief remarks that I'd like to share with y'all. I'm really sorry about the choices that were made by my team, by the organization, and by me. I've learned from this, and I hope to regain the trust of baseball fans. I would also like to thank the Astros fans for all of their support. We as a team are totally focused on moving forward to the 2020 season. Thank you.
That's Bregman. Here is Altuve.
Thank you, Jim, and thank you, Alex. I also will be brief. We had a great team meeting last night, and I want to say that the whole Astros organization and the team feel bad about what happened in 2017. We especially feel remorse for the impact in our fans and the game of baseball, and our team is determined to move forward, to play with intensity, and to bring back a championship to Houston in 2020. Thank you.
And to stop cheating. It's what we talk about, right? Accountability, responsibility, ownership. Those statements were an improvement over what's been said in the past. And according to ESPN's Marley Rivera, Bregman and other Astros went even further in owning what happened and pushing back on this notion that Alex Cora and Carlos Beltran ran the entire thing. Yuli Gurriel said, quote, "No one put a gun to our head. It would be a lie to say that one or two people are responsible. We are all responsible," end quote. George Springer said, quote, "We are all responsible. Carlos and Alex were great to us." Bregman, quote, "No one put us up to this. We did it, all of us. Not one person made us do anything." And then Carlos Correa went even further.
I was a leader of the clubhouse. The thing I have a problem with is when I read that report is that we were scared of him or we felt intimidated. We didn't feel scared of Beltran. We feel intimidated. He was the nicest guy that we could ever have. He was the best teammate we've ever had. Beltran was obviously a leader of the clubhouse, but we all had a say in everything that we were doing in there. And, you know, whatever he said and whatever we were doing, we had the chance to stop it as a team. Everybody had the chance to say something, and we didn't. So whoever the anonymous source is that's saying that we felt intimidated, we were too young to say something, that's just straight up bullshit. Beltran didn't intimidate nobody. Beltran's the nicest guy. And I know in Puerto Rican people will say, oh, he's just trying to protect him. But you can talk to every single guy here that was in 2017. Beltran is an unbelievable gentleman. He's a straight-up gentleman. And nobody, Not even you guys, nobody will feel intimidated by his presence, by his leadership, and whatever he has to say. He showed us how to play baseball hard. He was a veteran. He was inspiring. Whenever we were slumping, he was there for us. So I don't see a person that's your mentor and is there for you when you're struggling as an intimidating person. So yeah,
So he made that pretty clear. To quote Correa, the reports that Beltran intimidated them into cheating was straight up, quote, bull bleep. In other words, the players are acknowledging that they actively participated in it. They could have stopped it. They didn't. That's the kind of ownership that I'm looking for. That's the kind of ownership that I can respect. Unfortunately, the actual Astros ownership does not quite see it that way. Jim Crane did not do a good job today. Not at all. He had weeks to prepare for this, and yet he still tripped all over himself when he said things like this.
You know, our opinion is, that this didn't impact the game. We had a good team. We won the World Series, and we'll leave it at that.
Really? Respectfully, Jim, that's bullcrap. It's horse mess. Yeah, I get that you don't want to give back the 2017 World Series, but saying that the scheme did not impact the game is ridiculous. If it didn't matter and it didn't help, why the hell were you doing it? Let me help you with that. Because it did matter and it did help. Reminds me of all that bullcrap that came out during the Roid era. You know, bullcrap like you can't just pull a guy off the streets, shoot him full of bullroids, and think that he can hit Major League pitching. That to me was always the worst argument ever because nobody ever said that. Roids obviously helped, or guys would not have been geeked out of their minds on roids. Just like cheating by stealing signs actually helps. If it didn't impact the game, guys would not be doing it. Guys don't bang on trash cans if it doesn't help them hit baseballs. There is no point. Guys aren't turning the dugout into a performance of stomp just for the hell of it. If you want to argue that other teams are doing similar things, so your advantage was not that big, that's something different. But if you want to do that, you better come with the evidence about all the other teams. Otherwise, you're going to sound ridiculous. And he had other weird statements. Statements like, quote, I don't think I should be held accountable, end quote. Well, you want to talk about somebody leading from the front. My team, my organization, I'm responsible for everybody and everything in it, right? Yeah, apparently not. Apparently, ain't my fault. I didn't know what the hell they were doing. I didn't know what the hell any of them were doing. Yeah, I'm going to call bullcrap on that too. And if you didn't know, you should have known you own the freaking team. But he wasn't done. Then he gassed up that 18-wheeler and he ran it right over A.J. Hinch, Jeff Luno, Alex Cora, Carlos Beltran, and the players. He said the players, I should say the leadership, but he said the players, no, the players themselves were not at fault. Quote, these are a great group of guys who did not receive proper guidance from their leaders, end quote. Yeah, except for one thing, Jimbo. To quote MLB's report, the 2017 scheme was, with the exception of Cora, player-driven and player-executed, end quote. So to put it all on the leadership and say that these are all great players and it had nothing to do with them is absurd. And even if Crane wanted to roll out with that defense, why were players at the press conference owning it and apologizing for it? And why were the players telling anybody in the clubhouse today that it was their responsibility? Why are the players owning it more than the owner? And then what was the deal with this exchange with Marley Rivera?
Jim, sign stealing is a distinct advantage for the hitter. So how is it that it doesn't affect competition? So then what are you guys apologizing for?
We're apologizing because we broke the rules.
But isn't sign stealing a distinct advantage for the hitter, so doesn't it automatically impact competition?
It could possibly do that. It could possibly not.
Okay, guys, we're going to wrap up. Thank you, Justin.
So when did Jim Tomsula bite the Astros?
I would not say that. I wouldn't say it either. I would not say that.
The guy literally went Tomsula. Hey, Jim, don't you hate it when a reporter does their job and asks you a good question and you have a really bad answer? That made no sense. That made no sense. You got caught. Apologize for it. Own it. It's not a hell of a lot to ask. But to sit there and apologize for something, but say that that something didn't really matter is not an apology. You had all this time to prepare for this press conference, and that's what you came up with. Yeah, compare that response to even more from Correa.
So, I'm going to be honest with you. When we first started doing it, it almost felt like it was like an advantage. Everybody was using technology, so it felt like an advantage. But it was definitely wrong. It was definitely wrong, and we should have stopped it at the time.
You knew it was wrong?
Yeah, it was wrong. It was wrong.
At the time, you knew it?
Yeah, it was wrong. It was wrong.
And so what is the message outside of baseball when people in everyday life say, well, they cheated and seemingly got away with it. I should cheat in life. I can win, too.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's what we're here today, to tell everybody that it's not right to do that. You don't want to be standing here and, you know, having to do this because of that. You don't want to be remembered as that type of person. So that's why we're here talking to you guys today and telling you guys that what we did was really wrong. It's not going to happen again. We're going to play baseball the right way. But no, I don't want my kids. I don't want my brother. I don't want my family members, people that follow me, to think that I was right, that to cheat, to be successful is not right. So what we can do now as players is focus on what we can control from now on and make sure we show everybody that we're good players and the players that work hard every single day.
So that's how you handle that. We did it. It was wrong. We're sorry. It will never happen again. Pretty easy stuff, Jim. That's how you handle it. You acknowledge what happened. You acknowledge what you did. You acknowledge that it was wrong. You know it leaves a mark. You want to be better. It will never happen again. And I know I've played quite a bit of sound from Correa, but he said, quote, I don't want my kids. I don't want my brother. I don't want my family members or people who follow me to think that it was right to cheat to be successful. What we did in 2017 was terrible. We all know it. We feel really bad about it, end quote. Now you compare that with everything Crane just said, and you realize how terribly that went for Crane. And because of that, it's going to linger even longer until Crane can get it right. Hey, Jim, you're not going to get beyond this until you own this. And even then, plenty are still going to think that you cheated. But don't take my word for it. Just ask the Cheatriots.
We had a good team. We won the World Series, and we'll leave it at that.
That's incredible. Oh, we'll leave it at that. Oh, okay, Jim. If you say so, we had a good team. We won the World Series, and we'll leave it at that. It's got to be one of the worst responses ever. All this time to come up with something, ownership, accountability, to get ready for a presser, and that's what you come up with. The owner of the franchise. We had a good team. We won the World Series. I think I'll leave it at that. Oh, okay.
This didn't impact the game?
Yeah, not at all. Dear Rome, I did not say that it did not impact the game. Also, Jim Rome should be in jail. He has no experience in the radio category. The day of reckoning will come. Signed, Jim Crane. Drew in West LA, where irate Craig using Ford Fiestas as his weekend rig. On Twitter, quickly, Chip in H-Town tweets, I'm an Astros fan, and that was not an acceptable apology. Jeff Long tweets, Jim Crane is clearly taking PR advice from Papa John. Honestly, I cannot believe how badly that guy came off. I literally cannot believe how badly he came off. Dearest Van Smack, Alex Bregman's apology was very sincere. Regards, Eldrick Woods. Hey, listen, you can call those apologies fake. You can. You might be right. At least they apologized. They may not mean it. They might be sorry not for what they did, but rather for the position they're in. But at least they said, I'm sorry. We did it. It was wrong. The owner was not saying any of that. All right, so more on that. When we come back, I've got John Cooper, and then I've got Coach K. We're going back to back. For hour number one. Lots of time, though, to get to this. If you want to talk about that, if you want to call, if you want to tweet, if you want to email, you know where to find me. Never a good look, guys, when you untuck a long, bulky dress shirt. Like, you may think that it makes you look casual, but more than likely, you just end up looking sloppy. This is why Untuck It makes shirts specifically designed to be worn untucked. A casual shirt that's not too long, it's not too short, it is just right. Shirts designed so well, GQ calls them perfection. Untuck It shirts are a go-to for any occasion, from casual to dressy. And not only do they look good, they feel amazing too. Even the wrinkle-free options. Untuck It offers 50 different fit combinations. This way, tall, short, slim, and bigger guys of all ages can experience the perfect fitting shirt. Log on to untuckit.com, check out all the new arrivals. Be sure to use the promo code ROME. That way you get 20% off your entire first-time purchase. You can also go to one of their over 80 retail locations across the country. What I'm saying is, stop hiding your shirt with your pants and your pants with your shirt. Untuckit.com. Your solution to perfecting casual. Use the promo code ROME. Take 20% off your entire first purchase. Untuckit.com. Promo code ROME.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Lots to get done in hour number one. Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. All right, so at the top, we talked about the Astros and their presser. I've got Mike Krzyzewski coming up next segment. But right now, we are talking Tampa Bay Lightning hockey. We are joined by the head coach there. Seventh full season with the Lightning. Longest tenured head coach in the NHL. Led Tampa Bay to a President's Trophy, five playoff appearances, and an Eastern Conference championship. They are in second in the Atlantic. Tampa Bay is at home against Edmonton tonight. Head coach John Cooper is my guest. John, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm great, actually. It's been a fun little ride we're on here. I think pretty excited about tonight, but thanks for having me back on your show.
It's good to have you. Yeah, it's good to have you back, John. I appreciate that. You know, talking about that ride, you're coming off a 2-1 overtime win on Pittsburgh Tuesday night. Let me start right there. Nikita Kucherov had to leave early with an injury. You were already without Steven Stamkos, but the team kept rolling right on to its eighth straight win. So when you're in the middle of a run like that, how much confidence does the team have that every time it takes the ice, it's going to find a way to win no matter what?
Well, to be honest, it's very similar. Like, we're kind of in a stretch right now, which is where we had where we were last year, where you just you come to the rink and you just feel like you're up 1-0 all the time, and before you even hit the ice. The difference being, though, I think there was a lot of times last year, like, we left the game thinking, "Oh my gosh, I can't believe we got a point out of that, or we got 2 points. We didn't really deserve them." Where this year, we're walking out of there thinking, "You know what? We deserve those points." Like, we played well enough to win that game. We had some guys out, but we were on the doing all the right things, and we're getting rewarded for it. And so, you know, we're seeing results that we feel, you know, earlier in the year when we weren't getting those point totals, but we were playing pretty well, and now we're seeing those results, and it's been a great little run we're on.
We're talking to John Cooper. In fact, it's more than the little run. You've won 20 of your last 23 games. So you mentioned the start of the year. What's been the biggest difference between the start of the season and everything since, say, late December?
All mentality. And I say this about our team. There was something about us. We had, like, an offensive arrogance to ourselves. And I think no longer, like, I look back to game one last year in Columbus, and we're up 3-0 in the first period, and you know, all of a sudden things are rolling, and you're thinking, okay, this will be good. But instead of winning that game 3-0, we wanted to win it 8-0. And all of a sudden, you know, they get one, then they get another, and we're still pressing for goals. Next thing you know, we lose, and we lose four straight. And so one of the biggest things for us was to get over that mental barrier of saying, okay, yes, we love scoring goals. We love playing that way. We do. But if you want to advance, and it's that old cliche, defense wins championships, you need to be able to play D, and it's when you look out in the ice, it's not how many you put in the net, it's how many you keep out of your net. And so getting the team to, like, turn the corner, and it took some time to be able to break some habits and turn the puck over less and be a little bit more responsible, because, to be honest, it's not as fun. But in the end, you want to win, and you got to grind it out. And to train your team to play playoff hockey, you have to do it now, and that's what we've been doing.
John Cooper, my guest, I really, really respect that response. And to that point, you know, we're talking about how last season ended, and you've been pretty upfront about this. That's not the way you wanted the season to end, of course, but your message to the team was, quote, don't run, don't hide, man up. Look at what happened and come back stronger the next year. So what do you make of the way your guys have dealt with that shock and the pain of last year and the way they have come back?
Well, it's funny. We didn't play Columbus you know, it was 10 months ago we lost that series. We played them for the first time this year, just a couple games ago. And that was really when the memories kind of stewed all the way back. You know, you have the feeling where you are in the locker room and the coach's room and all that stuff. But the one thing is, I think the fact that we hadn't played them in such a long time was good for us. We wanted to see where we stacked up against them. But again, it's just those barriers you have to break to decide if you want to be a championship team. And it's when you get to the playoffs, there's so many other things into it, health and bounces and all those things. But if you've got the guys training right, I remember, you know, when I met the great Bobby Knight, I met him like 15 years ago. He was such an awesome guy. But he said, I asked him, what one piece coaching advice would you give me? And he said, don't worry about the other team, worry about your team. And once you've trained your team to do what you want to do, they'll be all chasing you. And so I've always tried to kind of keep that in my head, and that's what we're trying to train our guys to do now.
We're talking to John Cooper. You know, John, back to that point you made, that it's not about how many times you put the puck in the net, it's about how many times you keep the puck out of your own net. You talk about Andre Vasilevsky. He had 36 saves in that win over Pittsburgh. He's been on fire of late. Now, he talked about how he was not that pleased with the way he was playing earlier this season, and he said about changing that. What changes have you noticed from him, and how much does he mean to this team?
Well, he means, like, I look back, and or you look in sports, and I say, okay, well, football, you know, you've got the quarterback, probably most important guy on the field, and in hockey, you got the goalie, and they have such an impact on the game. And it's for Vassy, you know, we were kind of slowly turning our game around, and we'd give up last year, I'd say, 30, 35 shots a game, and he kind of relished it. Athletic goalie, liked the work. But when all of a sudden now you're giving up 18, 20, 22 shots, you go like 10 minutes without seeing one. He was actually struggling with that. And that's something that I think kind of goes overlooked in goaltending. Everybody says, well, you know, he's got all this athletic ability, but, you know, a lot of times it's put between the ears as well. And you have to train guys to, okay, what do you do during those 8 minutes where you haven't seen a shot? And so our goalie coach, Franz Jean, has done a heck of a job. You know, like when there's TV timeouts, he used to sit in his crease. Now he leaves the crease. He skates around, and he's got him doing all these different things to keep himself engaged in games. And to be honest, ever since he's been doing those exercises, he's really taken off. So, you know, it's those kind of little things inside the game that, you know, you're trying to help your players out, and that's been a great thing for Vassy.
John Cooper joining me for another moment or so. So we talked about your room, we talked about your goaltender, we talked about your team. John, let me ask you to make it about yourself for a minute. When you and I spoke last season, in fact, we spoke a year ago to the day, we talked about your coaching style and how you approach your job, especially as it relates to the players. As the longest tenured coach now in the NHL, how much have you grown and changed since you first took over?
Oh, my gosh. Where do I start? I'll tell you one thing, and when I was in the American League, so I'm kind of coming up the ranks, and when I was in junior hockey before that, it was basically myself, an assistant. There was no such thing as having video guys. And even when the American League in 2012, when we won the Calder Cup, it was just I had one assistant coach, and I brought a video guy in. So the way things have changed now, you know, you got three assistant coaches. We have two video guys. Like, there's just so much more involved. I used to be such a hands-on guy. Like, I didn't have, I guess, the trust or what I needed to do to, I just took, I guess, what's that saying? You wear so many, do so many things, assistants, and I let them do their job. And I don't, you know, it's obviously in the end, the decision's mine, but you have to find good people and you got to let them do their job and have, give them freedom to work. And kind of, I just manage the whole situation just like I manage our team. And I've stepped away from the group. I don't talk to our group as much anymore. My voice is now probably a little bit more fresh, being an older, kind of longer tenured guy. And it seems to be working out.
John Cooper joining us. I would say, you know, one last thought to that point. In fact, other coaches have talked about the dynamic between coaches and players and how much has changed over the years. You've made the point that in the past, that being a player's coach might have been something that was frowned upon because people thought that it meant you were just soft on players. But how much of being a player's coach is about constantly communicating and having a relationship with your players?
Yeah, there'll be people, I've heard the words partnership thrown around. And yeah, I guess in a way there is a partnership, but the relationship is key because, you know, like, I don't believe that the only thing you should go and talk to a player is about, hey, how to take a face-off or how to shoot a puck or where to go here. To get to know your players, like, you know, do they have wives? How many kids do they have? Girlfriend, parents? Because, to be honest, we spend 3 hours a day, 2 hours a day with them. There's 22 hours or whatever that they're doing something else. And I think for you to take a little time and care of what they do, and because what they do in those 22 hours affects what happens in the 2 or 3 hours you have them. And so, like I said, I'm not getting invited to these guys' weddings probably, but I think there's a respect value. And for us to take some time to get to know them, I think it makes the whole thing, just the synergy, it just makes it all better.
He is the longest tenured head coach in the NHL, 7th full season with the Lightning. He's the head coach there. They are in second in the Atlantic on a great run right now. To the day, John, it's been 1 year. It's great to have you back. I really appreciate the conversation. Thanks so much. Let's do it again.
Yep. See you in 365 days.
You got it, John. Thanks so much. If not sooner, John Cooper, head coach of the Lightning. It's a good first hour. Moving right through it. When we come back, I will change up again. If you want to talk about that, you know where to find me. If you want to talk about the Astros getting around to finally owning their cheating scandal, kinda, we can hit that. Duke basketball, my topic next. Coach K joins us. That's coming up. Second hour is wide open, and in hour number three, Bob Myers will be back in the jungle.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back. Once again, big, big day here in the jungle. We just had John Cooper on. We talked some hockey with him. Coming up in hour number three, the president of basketball operations for the Golden State Warriors, Bob Myers. Now, as I've said before, they pay me to be objective. I do not play favorites. That said, this is one of my favorite conversations. Every single year, we are joined right now by the head basketball coach at Duke. Most wins in Division I history, 5 national championships, 6 gold medals as head coach of USA Basketball, 12 Final Fours, a member of the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. Duke is 21-3. They're second in the ACC. They are currently number 7 in both polls. Notre Dame is at Duke on Saturday. We are joined by the head coach there, Mike Krzyzewski. Mike, it is so good to have you back. How are you?
Yeah, great. It's always good to be on, Jim, and I hope everything's going great for you guys out in California.
Super here, Mike. Great to have you back. And although you won't say it, I will say it myself. Today is your birthday, so happy birthday to you. How do you go about celebrating that, Mike? Do you have something special you can do, or do you wait until after the season before you get around to that?
No, we wait, and I just hope to have a good practice today. And yeah, you get a lot of texts, calls, gifts, cards from so many people that you spend every, you know, a good part of the day trying to answer people, just saying thank you for remembering.
Coach K joining us. I understand that. Now, Saturday night, man, that was some game you had against North Carolina, right? You came down back from 13 in the final 4.5 minutes of regulation. You go to overtime with that game. First of all, Mike, what's it say about the team that you were able even to get that game into overtime on the road against a rival thanks to that missed free throw, rebound, and shot sequence from Trey Jones?
Well, you know, we were fortunate that they missed free throws. And, you know, whenever you make a comeback in basketball, I think the other team has to cooperate. And they had played a great game, but they missed free throws, and so they had some empty possessions. And then we really rode our leader. It was, yeah, I've been fortunate to coach a number of national players through the years, you know, all Americans and these guys, all these top pros. And every once in a while, you're in a game where that person, that player has his moment, not a shot, the game itself or a segment of the game. And that's what happened with Trey Jones. He was on a different level than everybody. He was like the only guy on the court, and the rest of the kids on the team just followed him. And it seemed that everything he did, not just score, but everything he touched turned gold, you know, and he was the reason. You know, there's no question about it. He was the reason.
You know, Mike, he was, and also Wendell Moore. So when you've got guys like the two of them hitting the shots that they hit, and they do it against Carolina, they're going to be remembered for a long, long time. But as the coach, how special is it for you to see them have moments like that, given all the work they put in?
Well, you bring up a great word, and I brought it up too, moments. And I talk to my guys all the time about living in the moment, not in the past or the future, but this moment. And if you live in this moment, sometimes exceptional moments will happen. And that's what happened on Saturday night. It was an epic game. There won't be another one like it. You know, it wasn't a buzzer beater. It was much more than that. I mean, how many times do you see someone intentionally miss a free throw and do it the way Trey did, and it comes back to him, and then he hits a shot. He has a, Wendell, he kept in overtime the ball alive on a missed free throw, and 5 seconds later, it was on his hands laying it in. You know, I mean, just, some crazy things, crazy things. But, to be, like, I'm 73 years old, for me to be sharing a moment with those kids who are, like, Wendell's 18, Trey is 20, what a gift I've had, in coaching.
Mike Krzyzewski is joining us. You know, Mike, listening to the way you're laying that out right now and watching you and that team from the outside and looking in, it seems pretty apparent how much you love this team. What is it about this group that you love so much?
Well, there's no ceiling on anyone. You know, sometimes I do love my team. I said from the start of this, start of practice, this will be an old-fashioned team because anybody can help. We really don't have a starting five. We started so many different lineups. And so no one thinks of themselves as the fifth man, the third man, the second power forward or whatever. They're all themselves. And each of them have helped. Trey's been the most consistent along with Vernon Carey, no one thinks of himself as a part-time player. And sometimes when you have exceptional players, not sometimes, all the time, you are always trying to complement those one or two guys. And so you put a ceiling on yourself because you're always trying to complement. For us, we just tell them when you go in, be yourself and keep trying to be a better you. And as a result, every kid on the team has contributed to our wins.
Talking to Coach K, Mike, we've talked about Trey, we've talked about Wendell. There's a lot of other individual players I could ask you about, but I do want to ask you about Michael Severino, your grandson. He's on the team. How much does it mean to you to have him as a part of the program? And what's it say that he could have gone someplace else to play, but he was able to get into Duke and he wanted to take this challenge on?
Yeah, and actually, Michael's a freshman. He's my second oldest grandson. We have 10 grandkids, 6 boys, 4 girls. And, Michael is, we're actually redshirting him, he and one of our other walk-ons, because I'd like to see him not just graduate from Duke, but go to graduate school here. And so that's why he's not been in a game. Otherwise, I would be getting a hard time from not just his mother, but his grandmother. And I live with the grandmother, so I don't want to have a hard time with that. But what was cool, it's cool having him there, and he's not allowed to call me, my grandkids call me Poppy. So in July, when he was coming to summer school, and we sat down, I said, no Poppy stuff. And so he calls me Coach all the time. And when we won, he was the first guy on the court with Wendell, to watch that footage I'm very proud, Poppy for that kid.
That's super. Mike Krzyzewski joining us. Mike, I had your guy, Steve Wojciechowski, on the program last week, and we ended up talking about Kobe Bryant and his team his time with USA Basketball. Kobe, of course, was one of your players. So I can only imagine how challenging and how difficult the last few weeks have been for you as a result of his passing. Can you share a thought or two about Kobe? Like, what was he like as a player and a leader for USA Basketball?
Yeah, actually, we had a pretty emotional moment with my team. I hardly ever bring him up to my upstairs office. It's like a museum. And I brought out pictures of the two Olympic teams that Kobe was on and was our leader, and also some individual shots with the two of us. And I said, you know, I lost one of my players, and you guys are my players. And for them, he's the Michael Jordan for these kids. You know, Cassius Stanley, who's from L.A., you know, was heartbroken. And so there were a lot of tears shed. And for me, he was the key guy to build culture for the U.S. team, because he was the best player in the world in 2007, 2008, when we started to build a culture. And his relationship with that next era of stars, LeBron, Carmelo, Chris Paul, Bosh, you know, all those guys, Dwayne Wade, was the key ingredient. And the friendship that he and LeBron developed really was the cornerstone, the foundation upon which we built. And, you know, like, for me, the best thing that a player can do for me is let me in. You know, let me inside of you. And Kobe allowed me to do that. And, you know, I loved him. And he loved my family. Like, he was close to my wife. And, you know, I always had my grandkids at the Olympics. And he treated them. I have pictures of Gigi and one of my grandsons with Kobe and the gold medal. And, you know, the grandson we're talking about, Michael Severino, he so admired him from the Olympics in 2008 that he started calling himself Mamba. And we call him, goofing around, Mamba. And he, you know, that's how close our family. And look, I'm one of maybe, you know, it seems like millions of people who Kobe had that impact on. And certainly in your community, I can't even imagine how many people were heartbroken there, including the families. I mean, from all nine people, what a horrific event, and it's so tragic and shocking.
No, Mike, you're so right when you say that, because here in the community, because he lived not far from where I broadcast from even, and you're so right, it was such a tragedy for all the families involved. But Kobe was just such a constant presence in the community. Like, people would see Kobe around, and he, as you know, he was so good in dealing with people. This was not a hard person to see. He was always out and about. He was at the kids' games, and that's what makes the whole thing just so shocking. You know, really quickly, I've got about 60 seconds. You mentioned LeBron. What about that dynamic? What was their relationship like, Kobe and LeBron?
Well, I had actually flown up in Akron in 2007, because we only had young guys on our team, and I met with LeBron and before the qualifying tournament. I said, we're going to add three veterans, Jason Kidd, Chauncey Billups, and Kobe. And how do you feel about it? And specifically about Kobe, he says, Coach, that'd be great. He prepares better than anybody. You know, I'll learn from being with him. And really, they were, you know, they both have an incredible sense of humor and so smart. And LeBron would mimic Kobe a lot with the team and privately and laugh, and Kobe would just break down laughing. And to see those two guys interact like that made it so good for everyone else. And I'm sure LeBron is heartbroken for what happened to his friend and teammate.
Coach K, head basketball coach at Duke, most wins in Division I history, and celebrating a birthday. Mike, happy birthday. I so appreciate your thoughts on that and everything else. Great to have you back, Mike.
Thank you, Jim, and keep up the great work. It's always Always not just a pleasure. It's an honor to be on the best show.
So good to have you, Coach, and I appreciate you saying that. And you keep up the great work, too, Coach. Mike Krzyzewski, hour number two, straight ahead.